Welcome to Kadampa Podcasts. These podcasts offer practical solutions to daily challenges and help guide us to a happier and more peaceful state of mind. In each episode, you will find an extract from a teaching given by one of various Kadampa Buddhist teachers worldwide. All these teachings are inspired by the profound wisdom of Venerable Geshe Kalsang Gyatso Rinpoche, a Buddhist master for our time. We hope you will enjoy listening.
So as I said, we're looking at the topic becoming beneficial, how we can sort of transform our experiences of the question, what's the point, into some purpose. So I think that the context for this is really important because we've been kind of spending some time each week looking at different things that take us to the place of what's the point, right? Because there's different things to shove us to that place where we're thinking, why am I doing this? What's this about? What's the purpose of any of this? So I think one of the things that causes us to ask that question is our own suffering. Like when we have problems and difficulties and adversities that we face and painful experiences, sometimes we ask that question, like, what's the point? Especially if we worked really hard, right? Say we've really put a lot of effort into escaping those things or transcending those things or avoiding those things. And yet nonetheless, right, we have these things that happen. And so then we can get to this place where we're discouraged, maybe profoundly discouraged. And then we think, what's the point? So this is where tonight's teaching is really about, is like, how do we take the experiences that are the sort of inspiration, although I hate to use that word because we usually use that in a positive context, but that kind of are the inspiration for our thinking, there's no point or no purpose to continue experiencing what I'm experiencing or living the way that I'm living or whatever it might be. So there's a real power in our suffering that we don't often think exists because it's not something we prefer, like our kind of most fundamental basic wishes are to avoid suffering and to experience happiness. Like we all have that heartfelt wish. We're always driven to try to be happy or find things that we find that we think will make us happy, and then to avoid anything that will cause us any kind of pain or problem or, you know, even just slight unpleasant feeling. We're like inclined to avoid it. So we don't often think that the sufferings that we face, although uninvited, can have a purpose or a role that's valuable. And so this is where we have to kind of begin this topic by being open, right? Like having an openness, like maybe what I've been through or am going through or might go through in the future can have a very important role actually in the purpose of my life. Maybe it can drive me to have a greater purpose or more of a purpose or a new purpose. Like that's kind of the key, is we have to understand that suffering from its side doesn't dictate our response. Like it doesn't make us into anything. It's our way of responding to the suffering we have that determines where it takes us, right? So our suffering can take us to very dark places. Our suffering can take us to very philanthropic places, right? It can take us to kind of self-defeating tendencies. It can take us towards, you know, a more expansive view of what we can do to contribute to the world around us and the people we meet. So it's not that it decides. It's not like, oh, if I have this suffering experience, like say I experience some kind of illness, so then that illness defines me, right? Or say I have a loss, maybe a huge loss, maybe a devastating loss, then that defines me. It doesn't actually define us. It can inspire us in positive new directions. And if we begin to sort of explore that as an option, then we might have a good answer to that question, what's the point? So there's a very important set of teachings for Mahayana Buddhists called the Training the Mind teachings, where there is a whole set of teachings that are focused on transforming adversity into the spiritual path. And so they have a lot of themes along these lines. But one of the key themes in those teachings is using our suffering to develop a more expansive mind of compassion. So the example one teacher gave that I really liked, another resident teacher in this tradition, when they were teaching on this, was if we think about our problems as being like, and I know there's similar analogies we hear nowadays too, but like if you have a cup of water and you put rocks in it, and those rocks like fill the space, like the rocks of our problems and, you know, whatever we're facing is like filling the cup. And then there's just no room in the cup. There's nothing left in the cup. It's just like the water's overflowing. And so that can be the same circumstance. Like we have our own problems, our own suffering, and just fills the space of our mind. We're like in a sea of our own suffering. And all we can see is our own suffering and experiences. And then we're worried about future suffering. And then we're still going to the past. And, you know, it's just filling the space of our mind and who we are. So he gave this example as if you take those same rocks and you put them in an Olympic sized pool, right? Then all of a sudden there's space, isn't there? It's like plenty of space, plenty of water, right? To swim through. So similarly, if we take our suffering, we don't deny it, we acknowledge it, but then we put it in the space of the sort of breadth and depth of a lot of people's suffering, then all of a sudden it can have an effect of giving us some space. So often the things that will help us heal are very counterintuitive. So our tendency is to think, okay, to heal, I need to hyper-focus on my problems and pain and ruminate on them and dwell on them and like keep going back to those places, right? Just keep going back there again and again and again, right? And maybe each time getting more and more stuck, harder and harder to let go. Like that's what we think is the method. Whereas in Buddhist psychology, there's a lot of different methods, but there is a method that involves healing through understanding our experience is not unique to us, but is shared. That we're not alone in our painful experiences, that they are shared. And in doing that, we can A, start to feel less alone, B, start to feel more compassion, and then C, I'm going to stop now after the A, B, and C, that can kind of get us moving in a positive direction from that experience to give it a purpose or to give it a point. So there's a story that I'm sure some of you have heard me tell before, but it's a very famous Buddhist story of Kisikatami. So this is at the time of Buddha Shakyamuni. There was a young woman who was, you know, at that time living a pretty happy life, and she'd had a lot of good fortune. She was doing well, and she had a young child that she was very devoted to, loved very much. And this child died suddenly in infancy, and she became so overwhelmed by the grief. Like she became crazed by the grief. Like she was crazy with grief, as I'm sure we can all imagine. You know, it's like there's very few sufferings that kind of match the magnitude of losing a child, right? So she was kind of crazed by grief, and she was wandering the town that she lived in, carrying the corpse of her child, begging people to bring her child back. Just she's gone completely crazy. So this one woman took pity on her and, you know, said to her, I don't know anyone who can bring your child back, but maybe Buddha can help you. Because he's staying not far away. Like, let me take you to him. So this is a time of Buddha Shakyamuni. So this woman, this villager took this woman to see Buddha, you know, just maybe he can help you. And so she went up to Buddha, you know, with her child, and she was begging him, like, please show me a way to bring my child back. Please show me a way to bring my child back. And so he said, quite skillfully, says, I can help you if you bring me a mustard seed from a house that has never known death, right? A house that has never known death. So, you know, I think keyword is he said, I can help you, right? But she was just so happy that someone was saying to her, I can help you, that she left really hopeful. Like for the first time in a long time, she was like really hopeful. And so she went about like following this instruction. She went into the village and she started knocking on doors, asking for a mustard seed from a house that's never known death. And what started happening is house after house after house, she started to hear the stories of the deaths that had occurred in each house. You know, like the first house was like, you know, I'm sorry, we can't help you. There was a death here just last week. Next house, I'm sorry, we can't help you. There was a death here just last year. I'm sorry, we can't help you. There was a death here just yesterday. Like just house after house, stories of the loss of children, the loss of parents, the loss of loved ones, friends, partners. She's hearing these stories house after house. Going still like, you know, going door to door. Do you have a mustard seed? I need a mustard seed from a house that hasn't known death. But over the process, she got to a point where she stopped asking for the mustard seed, but she kept knocking on the doors. Like she kept hearing the stories one after the other. And then finally she was ready and she went back to Buddha. And he said, did you find the mustard seed? Did you find the mustard seed? And she said, no. But she said, I'm guessing you knew that, right? And he's like, you know, he said, well, then why are you here? You know, what can I do for you? And she then from her side, she said, you know, I'd really like to learn to study and practice Buddhism. You know, so she became a very dedicated practitioner who had a tremendous power in her practice to offer support to those who were in grief, right? That was kind of her trait. But what was really interesting about this story, I mean, there's many, many interesting things about this story because and things we can relate to, but was the healing power of hearing other people's story, right? Like, what did she need? Like, she thought what she needed was her child back. That was what she thought she needed, right? That was what she was going for. But no one could do that for her. What she really needed, right, was to heal from that grief. And what helped her to heal was to understand that she wasn't alone in that grief, understand and hear from those experiencing a similar grief. That was what helped her heal. So I think this is interesting for us to consider because sometimes we don't think the answer to our problem is to think about people with the same problem. If anything, we like to kind of embellish the significance and unpleasantness of our problem. We're like, no, nobody knows a work colleague like mine, right? And how difficult and conniving they are, and how they undermine me, and they throw me under the bus. Like, no one knows. They're evil, right? No one knows. So we think that. We think, oh, no, that my suffering, my problem, my pain, it is unique. No one knows. And in doing that, we actually compound it. We make it harder, much harder. And so then it's harder to find a purpose in it. Whereas if we do something counterintuitive, which is think about those experiencing that same thing. What commonly starts to occur is a little like that pool effect. It's like we're taking all the rocks, you know, that are in our own cup and we're putting them in an Olympic-sized pool and we're getting perspective. So instead of collapsing in on ourselves and becoming self-absorbed and hyper-focused on just our own experience and our own pain and our own problems and what's the point, feeling overwhelmed by them, we get a broader view. So then we take what was just a wish for our own personal freedom and we start to extend it to be a wish to include other people's freedom. So we're not just thinking, you know, may I be free from the sickness or problem or difficulty, but we're starting to think, may everyone be. And that feels very different than grasping at our own. Very different. And we can see within that there starts to kind of become some potential for actual benefit, right? There starts to be some potential for us to do something constructive with whatever hardship we've had, like with whatever difficulty we've endured. So this is kind of the full circle the kind of like full transformation in the teachings on transforming adversity. Is we get from a place of an adversity being like what weakens us, to getting to the point where adversity is something that strengthens us and strengthens us and our ability to be of service to those experiencing the same or similar. So that's where we then have a point, because we can see, oh, my suffering can actually make me more beneficial, not less. Like, it's going to give me a power to benefit that I wouldn't have had I not had that experience. So then we're deciding the point. That's like the theme of this series, is like, it's not that there is a point or there isn't. Like, suffering can have no point, but then there's no point. So we can make our suffering work for us, and we give it a point, and then we use our suffering to become beneficial. So there's a few verses or a few paragraphs about this in the book, How to Transform Your Life, that you know, reference this. So it says here, the early Kadampa Geshes would often say that to lead a virtuous life, all we need to do is harm our delusions as much as possible and benefit others as much as possible. Understanding this, we should wage continuous warfare against our inner enemy of self-cherishing or self-importance and strive to cherish and benefit others instead. So the early Kadampa Geshes of this tradition, this was their answer. Like, when people would ask, like, you know, what's the key to a happy life? That's probably the more modern way of phrasing it. Like, we don't tend to say, like, what's the key to leading a virtuous life? We don't tend to kind of think in those ways, but, you know, maybe you do, I don't know. But we do tend to think, like, what's the key to a happy life or a meaningful life? I get this question a lot when I go do, like, visits, like, you know, if I get invited to college to meet a classroom or something, this is a common question I get asked, is like, what's the meaning of life from the Buddhist perspective? And so, yeah, these Kadampa Geshes, they get this question too. So their answer was, to harm our delusions as much as possible and to benefit others as much as possible. So harm our delusions means our inner enemies, the states of mind that are at the root of our problems and pain, like our negative states of mind. Like, that's our enemy, right? Those thoughts and views and intentions that take us to dark places, that's what we're battling, right? That's what we're trying to overcome. So that's one way to lead a meaningful life. And then the other is to benefit others as much as possible. We think, okay, I'm going to take my experiences and use them to be of greater benefit. That gives those experiences a purpose.
If you feel inspired by this podcast, then dive deeper into timeless wisdom of modern Kadampa Buddhism by following the link in the episode description. We look forward to reconnecting with you in the next episode of Kadampa Podcasts.